part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
This is Part-Time Fanboy, and my name is Christian Horn, and I am here with my two friends, Jay Holtham, and the long-missed, but now returning, Paul Edwards, back on the Part-Time podcast.
Nice to be back.
Yes, it's so great to have you back, and we are here for a special occasion. We are here to talk about the new Netflix show, Luke Cage.
Luke Cage.
Part one. And we are going to do what we usually do. Well, first of all, spoilers, because we're going to spoil the hell out of it.
That's right.
But we're going to
do... He's a superhero.
Not too much.
He's a superhero. That's right. We're going to break it up into two parts, usually because we all have lives. We can't just plow through the whole series in one weekend. So we generally...
As much as we want to.
As much as we want to, which I almost
seriously
did this time. So this will be Luke Cage part one, and we will do part two
Luke
next
Cage
week.
So much more boring, brother.
I just totally stumbled through that intro. That was wonderful. I'm a professional. It's called Part-Time Fanboy. Anyway, why don't we start with the actual comic character? Like, what is everyone's sort of history with Luke Cage? Like, what are your sort of memories? Or, like, did you collect the books? Like, were you into it? What's the deal with Luke Cage? Who wants to start?
I'll tell you then. I got into Luke Cage relatively late for Luke Cage-iness. I was always sort of an X-Men kind of more superhero-y guy. And Luke Cage was a little retro. His heyday was a little bit before when I was seriously collecting. Mm. So I got into him when he was paired up with Iron Fist.
Yeah.
I think in their like second run of Luke Cage and Iron Fist, all the way through their very strange ending. And so I never got into sort of the renaissance of Luke Cage that came thereafter.
Okay, I have to ask, what was the strange ending? I gotta say, I don't really have much of a background with him, so I'm curious, like, what was the ending?
That comic book ended in, like, this weird, totally anticlimactic way, where they had this kid with superpowers.
I remember this now. Yeah, go ahead,
Who was, like, their sidekick, and he, like, lost his mind somehow, and killed Iron Fist, like, for no reason at all. And then it was just like Iron Fist was dead, and then the comic was just over.
I remember.
Was that the 90s or something?
No, that was like the 80s.
Yeah, it was the late 80s, maybe early 90s.
Yeah, I
when
remember.
When it all happened.
Yeah, I remember something
so
about
weird.
That. Yeah, it was like a really weird and kind of like a sad ending. Like it ended on like a really sad note. Like it was just like it's over. I remember
did
Marvel
it feel kind of, maybe like the writers didn't expect it coming, and so they had to sort of throw something together. I don't know.
It felt a little bit just like the comic book had its time had passed, because Luke Cage is about as 70s an action comic book character as you can imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
Like pure blaxploitation, and that was definitely not in vogue by like 1988. And same goes for Iron Fist.
Iron Fist was like the sort of attempt, I guess, at Marvel to sort of cash in on the kung fu movie phase. So he was sort of not, he would have been on his way out at that time anyway, too.
Exactly. So they were both sort of weird and déclassé, and they didn't really have anything interesting going on. So it seemed like it was just sort of like, we're canceling this book. Let's just wrap it up. Iron Fist had been given cancer and had like just cured himself of cancer and then died. And then like Luke Cage sort of went on and like became I think after this, he became an Avenger briefly and hooked up with Jessica Jones.
Well, that's like way after. We're talking like you're jumping way ahead, like into the 2000s. That's when Luke Cage actually kind of becomes interesting for the first time. Like, you know what I mean? Whereas I think there were a lot of like different iterations of Luke Cage between the end of like, because it starts off like Luke Cage, Hero for Hire, right? And then it becomes, I think, Hero for Hire, like no Luke Cage.
Right.
And then I think it becomes Power Man, and then it becomes Heroes for Hire. Like that.
And it became Power Man and Iron Fist, for Hire. Right.
Just
one of the absurd titles that was, it was like an absurd pairing, but it sort of worked. I mean, it wasn't as like iconic as like the Green Lantern, Green Arrow run.
Yeah.
But it had that same sort of like, we're dealing with social issues feel to it that definitely by the late 80s, like Marvel Comics was like, no, we're good. We're good on that.
Well,
Thanks, guys.
I think that the Power Man, you know, the Hero for Hire thing and then Heroes for Hire. First of all, it's like they were joined up into a book because obviously their individual books weren't doing well, right? Like, let's just, and obviously somebody was like, hey, put your chocolate in my peanut butter, you know, and this will make a great combination. And it did for a long time, you know what I mean? But I think that it's sort of like, It's sort of like Ghost Rider. It's like these series that kind of like were really great concepts, ran really strong for a long time, and then by the time you sort of get to like the 60s, 70s, maybe even 100th issue, I can't remember when, you know, Power Man and Iron Fist like eventually did get canceled. They just sort of like lost their audience along the way. And I think a lot of stuff was being swallowed up by like Avengers and Spider-Man and X-Men, to tell you the truth. I think the interest in those two characters kind of like lost its steam. I know for me, I mean, it looks like I went back this weekend and read some of the, like the first two or three issues of Luke Cage, you know, Hero for Hire, his first appearance.
Right. Yeah.
And the first comic he's as old as I am. He was in 1972, which I was shocked. I was like, wow, that came out in 72. And so, it's definitely one of those, they're definitely a pair, or, Luke Cage is definitely a character that has sort of like kicked around Marvel for a long time. Cause I remember they brought him back in the 90s and he had a different outfit. He had like a leather jacket and he had some kind of like not metal bands, but they were different than the regular metal bands, and sort of like leather pants and a red t-shirt as opposed to, and that didn't last very long. And then they brought him back as a Max book and gave him like gold teeth. And like,
oh my goodness!
He's gangstered him out.
It's like he's the Don Cheadle character in Boogie Nights.
Exactly.
Changing
his style, you know. And oh my goodness, that's funny.
Exactly. And I really do think it is kind of a case of like an industry that is more sort of Caucasian centric, not really knowing what to do with this character for a long time. And and it's interesting to me because I think that when Luke Cage finally caught on, I think it was Brian Michael Bendis in the Avengers who started doing stuff with him with Jessica Jones, and like they have a child, and I didn't really keep up with all of Bendis's Avengers stuff, but I know that that's sort of when, at least in the modern day, it seems like Luke Cage like just caught on fire because they got rid of any pretense of costumes. They got rid of any pretense of like superheroics. You know, they just, I mean, of him wanting to be like, I'm going to dress up in a costume and stuff like that. And he seemed to catch on again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And he seemed like, I mean, they really returned it to that idea of Hero for Hire. And he was sort of a detective, and the kind of person who, like, you know, is hired in his neighborhood to take care of things. And they also, I mean, I feel like leading into where the series is, he became much more a sort of gritty and associated with Harlem.
Yeah.
Starting with that, like, Max comic, which I read that and was like, this is a little much, guys.
Yeah,
it was super violent, and he was super thugged out. But it did start to become like he's a hero for his community.
Gotcha.
And I feel like that's where Luke Cage sort of grows into, because like the 70s Luke Cage is pure blaxploitation Borderline offensive.
Well, I mean, the first three
Marvel,
issues...
Marvel walked a lot of borders back then.
Yeah.
It's really funny because I've read the first three issues and I haven't gotten... I mean, there's definitely anachronisms and stuff like where you're just like, okay. But I haven't gotten across something like I did post on Facebook, like, he has to buy his costume, like, secondhand because he can't afford, like, a new costume. And I was like, come on, guys, this is, like, your first black character to have his own. And you're going to really have him shopping at a thrift store for a... So, that, you're right. There is a little bit of, like, come on. But but as a whole...
Even his catchphrase, "Sweet Christmas."
Sweet Christmas.
Well, you're like, oh, dude.
But is that so? That's what I'm wondering about, because you know, people said "Great Caesar's Ghost" or "Great Scott," or like, is there something wrong with "Sweet Christmas"? What am I just ignorant? Or
"Sweet Christmas" is a little much. "Sweet Christmas" is like that. Is like, I don't know. That is.
It just feels like they were trying to tap into something, and when it comes out of that character's mouth,
they tapped into something maybe they shouldn't.
Exactly.
Well, I think they were trying to give him his catchphrase, like "Great Scott," and it just coming out of that sort of where that character comes from, it just doesn't work. It's just like, this is just not working.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see these characters that were born in that transition period in comics, you know, where like movies were sort of becoming like the more. The bigger form of entertainment and things like that. So like you started seeing them, you know, you started really seeing the movies influence the books, and some of those characters come off like really strange sometimes in their origins, you know?
Yeah.
Which is why, like, I mean, I think this new series for Netflix works like super as a modern origin story.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Totally.
I totally didn't have like a lot of background going into it. I caught like the occasional issue of Power Man and Iron Fist, you know, like as part of other people's collections that I'd pick up at the swap meet or, you know, things like that. And so I wasn't a huge regular reader. I didn't really know what the characters are all about, but man, I love Luke Cage now. he's an awesome character.
Yeah.
So great.
He is really, I mean, in this series, he's really great. And it's interesting because I think one of the reasons I never got into Hero for Hire or Heroes for Hire is because there was always that sort of thing of like, hey, I make money off of this. And that kind of turned me off too. And it was something I always wondered and thought was like kind of off. Like, really, we're going to have this character who, you know, is African-American, black or whatever, and he's going to be the first American one of his kind, and he's going to take money for it. Like, there's less of an altruistic bent to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But in a way, it also makes them like sort of like working class heroes in a way, you know, like they're the dudes who like they go out and this is their job.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, it comes because they got to make a living, you know, they're men of the streets, you know?
I like that common sense for Luke Cage, who always is like, hey, this stuff is, I have to go get my costume in a secondhand store because this hero jazz doesn't pay.
It's
like, you like someone who's like, that's right. This isn't just, you know, doing something good.
Yeah.
There's I saw that thing you posted, Christian, about him shopping in the secondhand store. I don't know if you guys ever read the webcomic Text from Superheroes.
No. Oh, yeah, I've seen some of them. Yeah, I know what you're talking
about. Oh, they're great. They're great. There's just like, there are all these funny text exchanges between various superheroes, often just pointing up like the weird absurdities and like playing with some of the character dynamics. And one of the ones they have is a text exchange between Ant-Man and Luke Cage that points out that Ant-Man stole a bunch of shit, went to jail for it, and got the Ant-Man suit basically as a prize. Whereas Luke Cage was unfairly imprisoned and experimented on. And it's like, oh, right, yeah.
Oops, yeah. It's like,
that's how that worked out.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, when in the Marvel Universe, the double standard still exists. It's like, really
exactly.
But, I mean, they've seemed to have... Okay, so... How far is everyone on the TV show at this point?
I'm through episode 4.
Oh, you're episode 4. So you've done the origin. Paul, you were like, it said episode 6 or something?
I may be on episode 7 now.
7?
Yeah. I watched one more than I planned to.
I finished up to 8 last night. So I was plowing through them through the weekend. I think I watched like 3 in one night. I think it can be safely said that we all like this show.
Yes.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. Quite a bit. Yeah. I didn't see Jessica Jones. I think I saw.
Oh, you didn't see the series at all?
Nope. Didn't see I only saw 2 episodes of it.
Oh,
yeah.
You should see.
So I went into this kind of blind as to, you know, what Luke Cage was all about.
Oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. And how did that go?
No, I liked it quite a bit. You know, because it's it's just got a super beginning. I love the way that they set everything up prior to the origin story, you know. And I'm glad they did an origin story with him, you know. I think that it's important, and it was like really well done. And they put it in a really nice place, I think, so far in the narrative too.
Yeah. How about you, Jason? What are you thinking?
I love it, though. I have to be very honest, and I'm not tempering my love for it. I am still early in it, but I am so on board with this being a success that it's hard for me to like be fully objective about it. I mean, one, I think it's great. I think it's the best of the Marvel series.
Really?
I think they've been, yeah, okay. I really do. Like Daredevil, I liked season 1. I liked season 2 a little bit less because it felt like we ran into sort of the same territory. And his struggle didn't seem all that interesting in a way, particularly in season 2. But then I loved Jessica Jones. I thought Jessica Jones was terrific. And I feel like this is an improvement and expansion upon what worked so well in Jessica Jones. So that's why I'm like, I feel like this is stepping it up a little bit more.
Yeah.
In terms of sort of certainly in terms of style and the visuals of it, Mike Coulter is more perfect for Luke Cage than I could have possibly imagined anyone could be.
Uh-huh.
Even though he doesn't sort of match the like classic Luke Cage, he's what you want Luke Cage to be. He's cool as hell. Oh, he's so cool. It's exhausting. It's disappointing. It's
interesting because for me, I'm not saying it's bad at all, like not in any way, shape or form. I really, I've watched 8 episodes, like, you know what I mean? Right. And we all know if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you know how hard it is for me to watch like 8 episodes of a TV show in like practically one weekend. But for me, it is the weakest of the bunch, but I believe it's because the other 3 set up a different expectation than what I got. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like the first 3, Daredevil 1, 2, and Jessica Jones, were a little bit more action-oriented and a bit, there was a bit more of a tense, like, line, a line of tension going through each series where I was very much on the edge of my seat. With this one, I feel like that tension is not necessarily there. And there's a lot of reasons for me, like there's a lot of things that I think of why that could be, but I feel like it's gone in a different direction than the other 3. And that's why I like it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I feel like, well, first of all, like the pilot, I love the pilot. Like, and I feel like there is a lot of like Spike Lee influence all over certain elements of it, particularly some of the background music, the way that the music is placed.
The barbershop. That's, you know, a definite like homage there.
Absolutely. And I feel like the way that the color palettes are designed and stuff, like, you know, a lot of Spike Lee's movies, the colors are like really bright and kind of in the background, and, you know, and they're really well placed. So, and I love Spike Lee, like he's like absolutely one of my favorite filmmakers. So I was like, I'm on board with this. You know what I mean? But I feel like this one, as opposed to the others, is slower and kind of like taking its time with things. You know what I'm saying? Which I kind of appreciate. It's a bit more relaxed And this is going to sound weird. For me, it seems more relaxed because Luke Cage is like, I feel like we've got an invulnerable character. And I feel like the fight scenes wrap up really quickly because of that. And I kind of love that. You know what I mean? Because he doesn't really have to struggle with stuff so much. He's just like throwing people around. So they have to fill up the rest of the space with the episode with all this great texture and character development and, you know, scenes, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so for me, it rings very differently from the other three, but it's still great. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, totally. That's, I think that's one of the reasons I love it so much is that it's almost like, I guess it's like the question of like, what would Superman be if he had no secret identity?
Yeah.
You know, if he could just walk around in public, you know, with, you know, with people who know him, and you know, it's a really interesting perspective. And yeah, you're right. The fight scenes are like over, like nothing, because you know, a fight is just ridiculous. You know, he just sort of laughs them off. You know, by you know, and as it goes in, it becomes like almost even more of a joke to him. You know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And
you know, he's not even doing like crazy kung fu or anything. He's just picking guys up and throwing them through walls. It's great.
right. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and so like, that's kind of cool because like it plays around then with like, sort of like, okay, you know, how does this guy spend his time? You know, he's invulnerable. Mm-hmm. Nothing can hurt him. You know, he's got all the time in the world.
Yeah.
How does he spend, you know?
Yeah. I absolutely 100% agree with that statement. And it's one of the things that sort of kind of like snuck up on me as I was going through the series, because I mean, you do sort of get to, not that the others didn't have character development and all that, but this one, I don't know, everything, it just kind of like eases into everything. Everything is very sort of like smooth and like lays out sort of like in a perfect way. I mean, there definitely are awkward moments where I was like, okay, I don't know if I believe that, but that's with all of them. You know what I mean? Go ahead, Jay.
No, I'm just saying, yeah, I mean, there's definitely an awkward, but there is a much slower rhythm. I mean, it's more of a detective, like, not mystery exactly, but it's more of a, like, crime novel in a way.
It feels like Sam Spade or something, yeah.
Exactly. Like, there are all these references to Walter Mosley.
Yeah.
I mean, he has a whole conversation about Walter Mosley and George Pelicanos, and it feels more like that. Where we're in this entire community. That's one of the other things I like about it. I feel like, you know, obviously there are great and interesting characters in Daredevil and Jessica Jones, but this to me feels like the most full world.
Yeah.
That everyone we meet is interesting. Everyone we meet has a different sort of perspective and a different voice. And there are lots of ties that bind and connect people in weird ways. But they all feel so complete and part of one world that I really, really dig it. It just feels like it feels in some ways bigger than any of the other shows. Even with, you know, Daredevil fighting the Hand and all of that, this still feels like it's part of a bigger world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's cool. It's got, you know, it's got like elements of, you know, this sort of epic crime saga, you know, with a, you know, multi-generational crime families, and then you've also got like a police procedural thrown in there, you know. It mixes up a bunch of different genres really well, and I'm really enjoying what I've seen so far. And I think it's really interesting that we've got two Netflix shows on right now that are essentially about like New York gentrification and the struggle, you know, different struggles within the culture. But you've got like The Get Down, which is sort of a historical version, and then you've got a modern version, you know, more media, with Luke Cage. I think it's sort of like interesting that these two ideas popped up at the same time on Netflix.
Yeah,
very interesting.
That is really interesting. I feel like it's really funny because I feel like Luke Cage, you know, as messed up as Jessica Jones and Daredevil are in the head, you know, Matt Murdock, I feel like Luke Cage almost feels like the most lost to me, like the most sort of like man without a mission. Like, and that's definitely part of his origin story. You know what I mean? Where he's sort of like trying to find his place in the world because he's been wronged.
Yeah.
Where, you know, Matt Murdock definitely has like, I have a mission. I have a thing that I'm setting myself out to do. You know what I mean? And Jessica Jones is sort of like, I'm kind of done with the world. I'm not really interested in being part of it. And he is very much sort of like, yeah, I'm just trying to kind of like stumble my way through and do the right thing. And I really love like particularly all the bits in the pilot. Like, it's really interesting. I guess an article popped up online today that a lot of people are kind of pissed off at the series because it's kind of embraced like a conservative, you know, viewpoint or something, because he doesn't curse and he's not like some crazy, like over the edge, you know, gangster type. And there's a part of me that really sort of like loved that, because I don't see that as conservative. I just see that as sort of like decent. And it makes me really happy that they took this guy, this character, and they sort of established in the beginning that he has sort of a moral code and a moral fiber. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally hear that. I mean, I hear that's that argument. It's, and this is the other reason why I'm also so on board with it, is that, you know, as a black artist, as a black like person in America, as a black nerd, like, I am so fully invested in a show about a black superhero set in Harlem doing well.
Yeah.
That it's it's hard for me to separate like my desire for it to do well from objective criticism. And that one is also a very sort of within the black community, a big deal about what they call respectability politics.
Okay.
And the idea that like if we tuck in our pants, people will treat us better. And in sort of ways blaming, you know, people from the ghetto for where they're at because they don't act right. And there is some of that to Luke Cage and some of it in the early stuff, but I feel like there are also enough other characters that balance it off. There are enough other voices that sort of all work together.
Yeah, you definitely see it as one of the issues like in his world, but you're right about his world being so much bigger than that. I mean, that's sort of the inspiring thing about it in a way, is that he's like, you know, all of the problems that like he, you know, he faces, it ends up, you know, being he's a sort of he becomes more larger than life as this show's going along, you know? And it's cool to see like a superhero building his confidence. You know what I mean? Like, that's not something that you often get to see, or you see it in a montage. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, confidence building is like this slow process that goes on for years and years and years. And like, it's cool to see them sort of like taking their time with that, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny that you say like the building confidence thing, because that's definitely something that we're seeing in this series and that I really like about it, is a guy embracing, you know, the idea of being a hero or actually standing up for something, where he kind of just kind of like wants to be, you know, it's sort of a theme that's run through. You mentioned Superman earlier, but like the really good Superman stories like Kingdom Come or something like that, where it's like, I don't really want this responsibility. It's kind of being foisted upon me. I guess I have to embrace it because this is sort of like my destiny. And that's one of the things that I really have liked about this, is that this guy has been given, and I think he even says it in one of the early episodes, like, I didn't want this. Like, I don't want anything to do with this. And you know, it's sort of a common thing in, like, heroics, but to see it unfold through, like, whatever, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 episodes, you know, and it not feeling like, come on, dude, shit or get off the pod already, you know what I mean, is, I think, a really good storytelling accomplishment.
Yeah.
I think
really
so too. And he's got some great villains too, you know. I'm just like, that's one of the things that's so entertaining about the, you know, it seems like the Marvel TV shows are as much about their villains as they are about their heroes so far, you know.
Yes.
And like, that's kind of cool to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cottonmouth is just so wonderful. I am so glad that he's a gunrunner and not a drug dealer that I'm like, oh, Thank you. That's so much more interesting.
Well, I do love Cottonmouth. I think the actor that plays him, his first name is Ali. I'm going to massacre his last name. I guess it's Mahershala or Mahershala. Mm-hmm. I am not sure. I'm sorry. I probably massacred your name. Not that he'll ever hear this. But he plays it with such flair and charisma and just like crackling energy. It just like really... really bounces off the screen. Like any scene that he is in, he commands that scene and he is in it.
Yep.
Even the scenes where him and Luke Cage are kind of facing off, there's this thing that he does, which is when somebody's trying to be serious with him. And it's something that kind of bullies do that really can get to people, which is like, mm-hmm. you know, they'll say something like that they think is like intimidating or that they think was like a burn. And he just laughs at them. And he's like, amazing, like very handsome, like charismatic smile, and it's just like he just laughs at them, and with that laugh it's just like reduces them to like, you know, being so tiny, because it's like, oh right. I had the upper hand on you for a second and I was kind of like intimidating you, and he's just like, yeah, no, he's just brushing them off. He's fantastic.
He's in command of his world.
Ugh. and what a world, man, you know, like it's cool that he sees himself as like the heir to this legacy, you know. He's a criminal in Harlem and he's proud of it, you know, and he's part of a long line of criminals from Harlem, you know, and like for somebody to totally like embrace that and like just It's an amazing performance. I've been pretty blown away too.
It's really great because we talked about, again, sort of like, you know, I keep going back to Superman, but it's like the Alfre Woodard and the Cottonmouth characters are sort of like the two sides of Lex Luthor, where Alfre Woodard she does is crave respectability and trying to protect her like chunk of the city. And, mm-hmm. you know, Cottonmouth is just like, no, I'm a villain and I'm going to take over mm-hmm. and I'm going to get my respect. And this new guy in town, I'm just going to take him out. It's like they've taken sort of Lex and split them into two different characters who are sort of like at each other's throats all the time because they sort of want the same thing, but they really want different things, right?
Exactly. They totally want different things and totally come at it from different places. That, you know, Black Mariah is... in her own way, I mean, you know, her own screwed up way. And I know there's more interesting stuff with her coming down the line, but like, so thus far, she's trying to do sort of the right thing all the way around.
Yeah.
She's just done it the worst possible way, you know, working with her cousin who does glory in being, you know, the kingpin, and glory in that power and in that role. I mean, dude, that shot of him in front of the Biggie Smalls poster,
mm-hmm. Stepping up into the frame.
It's just perfect.
Oh my God. Like, yeah.
That's who that guy is.
Yeah. That you shot know, where he's slowly like stepping into, and he steps and the crown is like almost on top of his head. That's an amazing shot.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's just, like, you know who that dude is and this is all he wants to be. And the tension between the two of them, because like this can't last. One of them is going to have to win.
Yeah.
And it's a great point that it's the two sides of you know, the sort of classic villain.
Yeah. I mean, Alfre Woodard is absolutely fantastic in this, in, you know, the moments where, you know, you see her talking to him and she just, like, Alfre Woodard has always had this face that is just like, it's just filled with emotion, but there's like a sadness to it, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And like an intensity. Yep. And, you know, it's great because her character so much, it seems like she's craving respectability. She's craving mm-hmm. sort of acceptance by like society at large so that she can sort of like help her neighborhood, but mm-hmm. you know, she's not above like letting Cottonmouth do what he needs to do so that she can get the money for the projects in her neighborhood. But at the same time, like, she kind of is not so much in touch with her like side that wants to accept that. She just sees it as all good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And Cottonmouth sees it for what it is. You know what I mean? And he's like, don't kid yourself. You know what I mean? Like, you let me take care of like all this nasty business and you just sit back. And it's funny how much Alfre Woodard just thinks like how much in charge she is when she's kind of not, you know?
No, not at all.
Not at all. What did you guys, we've talked a little bit about the villains and a little bit about Luke. What about Misty Knight?
Damn.
Yeah. Holy cow.
That's all I have to say about Misty Knight.
Talk about perfect casting.
I'm in love with Misty Knight because any reasonable human being would be. Yeah. Holy crap. She's so awesome.
She's fantastic in this show.
Yeah.
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 What a great introduction. You know, the flirtiness going on, you know, just the whole, she's incredible. Even like her, even the addition of like sort of her new superpower, I guess, you know, could she do that in the comics? Could she like,
no, I don't even know that that's a superpower. I just think that's like her imagination where she kind of like zones out and is trying to figure out. I think they're just, it's just a tool that they use.
Okay.
Like on the show.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, she's just so interesting, you know? She's just like when she steps on the screen, you know, and she doesn't spend a lot of time with Luke Cage either, for someone who's traditionally sort of the romantic interest, you know, they spend like, you know, there's that moment at the beginning and then they're like apart for, you know, quite a long time.
Yeah.
But when they're together, man, it's like total chemistry. It's really fun to see.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a ton of chemistry going on. When she's another one, when she kind of like walks on the screen, it's like electric. Like there's electricity just like bouncing off of her, and she like has an intensity that you just like when she's in the scene, it's like this is her scene. It's like, you know, you would have those actors when they walk in a scene with you and you're like, we're just supporting players here because like the star just showed up, you know what I mean?
I think the directors of the show do a great job with walking that line between like what could almost be silly and totally overblown, you know, but it works. Like, you know, it's like, it's sort of like the performances are really kind of showy and stagey, you know, but it's kind of cool because it really works for the character. It makes all the people that you meet very vibrant and feel very alive.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so much stuff of it, like in the way they use language and the way the characters speak, that like is that still has that ring of one of like detective novel of like Walter Mosley and the sort of like the way the character, the poetic turns of phrase that they use. I can't think of any, but it's just like in all the scenes, especially with Pops as Frankie Faison, like there's just all these like beautiful sort of gems of phrases. But I guess the one that, you know, that sort of stands out to everyone is I ponder a woman, where you're like, that's not even right, but you made it work. And I don't know how you did that.
Yeah. It's I mean, there's just so much going right on this show. You know what I mean? It's a different pacing. It's a different, it almost feels like it's of a different world. And there's a lot of times where I feel like I'm watching it and it is much more sort of authentic New York, kind of like as I remember it, than either of the other two. You know what I'm saying? Like it feels like it's much more sort of grounded in a reality. I'm not going to say in reality, but maybe it's just that I just remember those New York winter, because it seems like it was definitely shot in wintertime for sure, because all the trees are bare. And it just reminds me of all those sort of like, you know, the streets just seem kind of bare. It doesn't, the neighborhood itself doesn't have like a ton of character, except for when you go into the clubs or into the particular shops or into a particular setting. But it just feels like New York. Like when I'm watching it, I feel like obviously it is shot in New York, but I just feel like it's more authentically like the city than any of the other Marvel shows, even though all of them shoot in New York, apparently.
Yeah, no, they all shoot in New York, but this one feels the most like the Hell's Kitchen of Daredevil and and Jessica Jones don't feel like Hell's Kitchen. They feel like Hell's Kitchen from some other time. This feels like Harlem. This feels like it feels like home. Like it's just there. Or I don't know how they did it.
Yeah, maybe it's just that it feels more like the New York that hasn't been stripped all of its character. You know what I mean? Like the New York that hasn't been designed or stylized or, you know what I mean? Maybe it feels like more like the New York that we kind of grew up around, which wasn't like flashy, you know, had character to it, but, you know, was more like these rundown sort of like boring buildings and neighborhoods that were full of like characters and like you never knew like what was going to happen from one moment to the next. Because it was just kind of like a crazy city. And I feel like they really captured that environment in this New York. Or it also feels like sort of like a neighborhood that isn't, that hasn't been gentrified yet. You know what I mean? Or hasn't been taken over where, you know, you've got dudes selling on the street, stuff selling on the street. Because like when I go back to Queens and visit like my family,
what about the dude selling the event videos?
I love that.
The incident.
It's such the a incident. Great story.
Right. You know, that's sort of their nod to that, I guess.
Yeah.
Yep, that was so perfect.
Well, I love that that's being kept up too, because I noticed in the credits for, because I mean, even though there seemed to be, I do not know like what is going on, obviously, but there seemed to be like things going on between the movie and television divisions and the comic divisions. But I'm glad that at least that these series have been like, no, we're all in the same, we're still in the same universe. You know what I mean? Our characters don't necessarily play with those other characters because they're doing stuff on a different level. But like our characters are in this world. And, you know, I love that he's like, High def, Blu-ray, I got it. You know what I mean? Or he's just like, he's trying to sell, like, I got the best footage from the incident. And I'm like, wow, that would be happening.
Exactly what it would be.
Or would it? Because do you see dudes like selling footage from like 9/11? Like, I don't know. You know, like I would imagine that the incident would be a tragedy, right?
I mean, I think it's both. Like, I mean, it's different than 9/11 in that, like, listen, it was, you know, the superheroes. The Avengers. Like, I would watch that video.
Yeah. I mean, this is essentially, I mean, it's almost like Earth's introduction to, you know, gods and to the, like, to the universe. You know, it's not only Earth's first encounters with aliens, it's like their first encounters with, like, abnormal, you know, superhuman people and with gods and with monsters. I mean, it's like, it's crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'd probably buy a bootleg of that.
Well, what I like about this show is that it very much is like when he gets shot and people see him get shot, they're like, what is going on? Like, they can't process it. Like, I love this idea of like that they do know that there are these like extra special individuals out there, but they are, again, so high above us, like doing things that there's no way that I would ever imagine that one would be in my neighborhood, right? So, when they're fighting Luke Cage and they're actually, like, shooting at him or trying to, like, hit him and they can't do anything to him, they are just in complete disbelief.
Yeah, they're confused and like, that's not how that, what?
Yeah, exactly. And it's not sort of like... Like, I feel like they do a really...
That was actually one of my favorite moments in the pilot is when he picks up the washing machine and pops it.
Oh, God, that was
great. I love it when you do stuff like that.
So wonderful.
It's great. I also really love how Luke Cage, you know, obviously he's bulletproof and obviously, you know, he can get shot and he can't get punched and stuff like that. But I really love how it's not like Superman. Like, if he gets shot by something more powerful enough, it hurts him. Like, he's like that kind of, you know, he's not just like, I mean, he is pretty much at some points just like standing there and taking it. But if somebody hits him with something hard enough, he is definitely not enjoying it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, he's going to feel it.
And I like that they reminded us, because I know, Paul, you didn't see Jessica Jones, but, you know, he gets shot in the head.
That's
point blank with a shotgun. Wow. And I'm glad that they reminded us that, like, yeah, and it really messed him up. It obviously didn't kill him, but it hurt a lot and, like, had a long residual After Effects. I thought that's good for reminding us that.
Yeah. I mean, they did. It's interesting because when the show first started, I know Amy and I, my wife, we were kind of like, is this before or after Jessica Jones? We were kind of trying to figure it out for a little bit, and then it kind of settled in, and I was like, oh no, it's definitely after. It's definitely after. But you know, I really. The other thing that I really love about this show is that, you know, having read a little bit of Luke Cage over the weekend, is that they are keeping the names of characters from the comic books. Like, obviously, there's no costumes and crazy outfits or anything like that. But, you know, Diamondback, Cottonmouth, and, you know, he calls her, you know, Black Mariah at one point. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, there's all these, you know, it's funny, the Shades character in the comics was originally black. Like, I was reading it, and I was like, oh, they actually did whitewash one guy. But the Shades character in the show, the actor is so intense that I was like, oh, dude, where did they find that
totally
guy?
Fine.
Has anyone ever heard that guy before? Because he's amazing.
I feel like I've seen him in something else before.
I've seen him in, gosh, I can't tell you. I could probably look it up while we're chatting. But,
he is definitely that guy that, like, kind of like walks into the room and you're like, yeah, I don't want to be standing next to that guy. Like, I want to go over here. Nope. I don't know what he's going to do. And the thing is like, he doesn't really do anything. It's very early De Niro. It's very like the guy walks into the room and he hasn't really hurt anybody. He hasn't flipped out on anybody. He hasn't, he's just there and everyone knows that he's kind of like a badass, you know?
Yeah. He just has like the most intense attitude you've ever seen. He's from Sons of Anarchy. That's where I remember.
Oh, I've never seen Sons of Anarchy. I gotta watch that show.
He was quite good on that too, but nowhere near this intense.
Yeah, he's really good on this show. What did you guys think about the origin episode? Because I just love all the little bits sprinkled throughout, you know. That stuff. I mean, they changed certain things. Like I don't even know. Over the weekend, I went to like my old copy of the Marvel Universe Handbook from like the 80s, and you know, I looked up real name, and it said like real name unknown, like Luke Cage. So I'm wondering if like they never, up until that point in the 80s, they never revealed in the original. In the first issue, the first issue of the comic book, like with the prison stuff and all that, they call him Lucas. And that's all they call him. So I'm wondering if in the comics, because obviously I haven't been, you know, plugged in, you know, that's one character that I haven't been totally plugged into. I'm wondering if that is Carl Lucas is his name.
I think so. I mean, I think that it's, it's in Wikipedia now, and I think that it's one of those things that from like the later Bendis years they did that. I didn't realize that Luke Cage wasn't his real name until I was looking up something. I think I was looking up Shades or one of the other characters from the show, and they mentioned that Carl Lucas became Luke Cage. So I think that's a much later sort of retcon / reveal,
probably. Yeah, because in the original first issue, they keep calling him Lucas, and when he escapes, he's like, oh, I'm going to change my name, and I'm going to have a little bit of the old, and I'm going to, you know, I'm going to call it Luke, and then I'm going to change, my last name is going to be Cage to remind me, like, where I came from or something like that, you know, the cage that I escaped or something like that. So, like, that's why he sort of comes up with that new name, because he still is on the run, you know, from the law. And but I just love the, you know, the thing is like I love the little bits with the, like when he gets dipped in the bath and he comes out and he's got the crown on his head and he's got the
tiara.
I never called it a tiara. It's the headband.
It's a tiara.
No, it's not. But you know, the bracelets, the armbands and everything. And then he eventually has to steal like the yellow shirt and the oversized yellow shirt. And it's just like, it's little bits like that are like, look, we're not going to do this, but we know you're out there. We know that you loved this stuff at one point. So we're going to have a little homage to it. You know, we're going to call back to it.
Exactly.
And we're going to let it.
Or else,
lay there. You know what I mean?
We're also going to call it out as stupid. I love that people be like, I look ridiculous.
It's great because you know that the original costume, you know what it was? It was an escape what? Artist uniform.
Oh my God, what? Yeah.
So it was
what escape artist dressed like that?
Well, they have chains. He's got the chain as a belt, and then he's got the armbands right. and all that stuff. So it was that was their explanation that it was an escape artist outfit that that the guy never came back to pick up or didn't pay for or you know only put a deposit on or something. And so
wow.
you know, Luke Cage is like, I will take that as my own, you know, because it has the chains.
I want a comic book about the dude who had to pawn his escape artist <He's> so
and then saw it on the news where Luke Cage is like running around.
Hey,
you know,
that's my stuff.
What are you doing? So yeah, I mean, it's funny because I just love those little touches that Marvel will always seek to kind of like put in there and be like, hey, everybody, we know you're out there. We know you love the comic book. So we're going to do this. You know what I mean? Right. It's great.
Right. Just give us a little nod.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, I really do think that this show is pretty much, you know, all around awesome. There's definitely so an aesthetic to it that's different than the other three or the other two, Daredevil mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Jessica Jones, but it really is beautiful to look at, like visually, and
oh, yeah.
the sound design is just gorgeous. I mean, I also love that it has a soundtrack. I love that it has like actual music in it. You know, I mean, songs, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And,
yes.
And
the music is great.
That's part of its identity. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think one of the fun things too is that it has a hallway fight scene, which like it's something like you have to throw into a Marvel show now, and it's so cool that it's over with in like about 2 seconds.
Yeah, the hallway fight scene is fantastic. Is episode 3 when the other hallway fight scenes? Like, I'm wondering if it's like, okay, this is episode 3. This is where we have the hallway fight scene. You know what I mean?
I think it is.
I'm going to have to go back and look because I know that they come early on.
I think it's episode 3 in both of the Daredevil. And I think it's either episode 3 or 4 of Jessica Jones when she fights her way through the triplex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The duplex. I think it's the same. I think they land in the same spot. Yeah, that's their like hallmark.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's interesting because you mentioned Jessica Jones. I guess the one thing that not that bugs me about the show, but the reason that I feel that it's kind of like very sort of relaxed in the beginning is, you know, Jessica Jones and Daredevil, they're introduced to like, they're sort of like villains in the beginning, and mm-hmm. the villains are very threatening. They have powers or they have abilities or they have power over them that they can exert. And mm-hmm. in this show, with Cottonmouth and, you know, Mariah, they really don't have anything that they can really do to him other than sort of hurt the people around him. And I think that that's part of what the different feel is here, because we've definitely got like an invulnerable guy and that can't be hurt. And so I believe that that's part of the reason that the tension is not there, because you're sort of like after the third episode or something of him getting shot at and blown away, mm-hmm. that you're sort of starting to feel like, oh, okay, like nothing can really hurt this guy, you know?
Right. Right. And it's interesting, you know, I mean, once they start focusing on the people around him, and I mean, that's where it's going to be interesting, even though, and I do love the show, I was like, Cottonmouth, you fired a bazooka?
Yeah.
In the middle of the city?
Well, okay, let's like talk about that for a second, because when that happened, I was sitting there with Amy and I was like, dude, there was like an explosion, like, a month ago, like in New York. And like, you know how huge that would be on the news? And they're sort of just acting like, you know, well, this is just like another crime. And I was like, no, 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 no. The FBI, Homeland Security, like the shit would
Where's
go down.
Where's SHIELD on this, man? Where's SHIELD?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Where the
It's a rocket launcher. I don't know why, like, they have to go check the videotape. I'm like, everyone on the street would be able to tell you it was a rocket launcher. It was a Cottonmouth, because exactly. He was right there. Yeah. I saw his face.
Yeah, and that was definitely one of those beats that kind of just like came out of nowhere. Like you had a scene, mm-hmm. and then you had him in the thing, and then all of a sudden it's like Cottonmouth with his own rocket launcher, and he's like shooting it, and I was like, wait, and that's definitely where I felt like we got into blaxploitation territory, or like
a little old bit, 70s, yeah.
like low budge, you know, sort of movie where the villain or a character would just do something outrageously unrealistic, and you're just sort of like, okay, I guess I'm gonna go with that. You know,
that's fun. You know, like I'm glad that that's still there too. You know, because like it, you know, there's sort of an inherent like silliness that goes along with like some of the Marvel stuff from the 70s too. You
Absolutely.
Know, like if you look at yes. those background characters, some of them are like absurd. You know,
yes,
and it's cool. It's cool to see a little of that still showing through.
Turk. It was good to see Turk show up.
Turk.
It's great. Well, I love his exit line where he's like, you people are crazy up here. I'm going back to Hell's Kitchen. Like, it was great.
It was perfect. Yeah. Again, these are just like these great little details that make this feel like a world.
Yeah.
And feel in some ways like comic books.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously the movies don't do sort of those kind of cameos as well. But, you know, it's something that this version of the Marvel Cinematic Universe does. It's something that like the I know it's another universe and a totally different podcast, but like the DC Berlanti universe does well, of those like these things are all connected and these people all sort of know each other. And it was just great to see Turk for like the two episodes where we were just there playing chess.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
nice.
It's like
just
a little detail.
Out.
Yeah. It's again, it's just like you said, like the Berlantiverse and this sort of thing, the little sprinkled like Easter eggs that are there, mm-hmm. you know, for you to pick up on. It's just, it's really great that they're still paying attention to that and they're sort of like moving forward with that. I'm yeah. wondering how all this is going to expand, you know, because apparently there's like a Moon Knight show and then there's
right.
like Punisher coming out.
They're going to do it. They're going to do a Moon Knight show.
That's what I
yep.
heard. I heard that
they're prepping a Moon Knight show.
Color me like super duper curious about that.
Yeah.
It's like if they're, I'll be honest, if somebody can pull off Moon Knight, they can pretty much do anything.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly. Well,
yeah. He was always
yeah.
one of those
They've
characters.
Got Moon Knight.
Well, I mean, he's basically Batman, like, let's face it, you know, and is he going to have
yeah,
the costume?
But,
you know, I mean, that's.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
But, like, and they're also going to embrace the time when Moon Knight went crazy.
Oh. Well, like split personalities, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
split
many questions.
Legit crazy.
He was legit crazy. Like he was like a cab driver and he was like something else. He had like three identities, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my
you know, the
God.
And
cab
he lost track
identity,
of which one
right?
was really him. And
yeah.
oh my God, it's going to be great. But yeah, because it's, you get, I can't remember if we get Punisher before the Defenders.
Well, we're going to get Iron Fist in March.
Yeah, we get Iron Fist in March. And then after Iron Fist, we get the Defenders, which will be Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Iron
oh
Fist, and
God.
Luke Cage.
Yeah.
And then I think we finally get the Punisher series on his own.
Wow.
And then Moon Knight is next on the docket.
Moon Knight.
Before,
were...
I think.
No, go ahead.
I think, and then we finally get Daredevil 3 and Jessica Jones 2.
Well, I don't think Daredevil 3 has been confirmed yet. Jessica Jones has.
Yeah.
But Daredevil 3, I think there were even rumors that, like, there was talk like that they might not even be Daredevil 3 or
Ooh,
something. Which would
dream.
Suck. Because
would
I
suck.
Love Daredevil.
Yeah.
I love Daredevil.
Yeah.
I thought season 2 was great. I thought season 1 was great. I think those two are my favorites. I mean, the first season of Daredevil is my favorite. I really love Daredevil, but I mean, I love them all, you know.
Yeah.
Jessica Jones was great. I had some problems with sort of, I mean, we talked about the Wile E. Coyote factor a little bit, not
right.
to spoil anything for you, Paul, but, you know, you should definitely watch it. But, and this Luke Cage thing, it just really feels like it's a thing of its own. And that's why I think it's kind of so great. You know, I mean, it
mm-hmm.
is part of the whole thing, but the design sets it apart so much, you know, that
yeah.
I'm like, oh, because I think that's what was jarring for me, is that it kind of like went in a bit of a different direction. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
As far as like
mm-hmm.
tone and speed and design. And,
yeah.
but I welcomed it at the same time because it was like, oh, this is like a different thing in like the same universe. So, and all the shows don't have to have the same tone or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying all of the sort of different things that they're bringing to the table in the TV shows.
Yeah, me too. Mm-hmm. Me too. I'm excited. And I'm wondering if like any of the movie stuff is going to like touch this stuff, because it seems like the stuff that happens in Doctor Strange is going to be like absolutely mind blowing. And I don't know.
Yeah.
Will it affect the real world? You know,
I don't know.
Yeah. And Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is still chugging along, and they just introduced Ghost Rider, which I was hoping was going to be a Netflix show. And I was like, no.
Yeah, me too. But, you know, perfect world, we'd get a Werewolf by Night show too.
Exactly. And listen, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. needs all the help it can get.
Dude, come on. They got to do Son of Satan. Yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Son of Satan.
That would be awesome. All right. So this has been part one of our Luke Cage episode. I am Christian Horn, and I am on the line with Jay Holtham and Paul Edwards. Please check us, and this is Part-Time Fanboy. You know, check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, review us on iTunes, and hopefully we will be back next week with part two of Luke Cage on Netflix. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Part-Time Fanboy.
Part time. Oh, yeah.